This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing, incredible, and oh so curious friends. You are looking fantastic. Hi, my name is Jed Lee, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, aquanauts, astronauts, and other experts as they solve problems in their jobs using curiosity, creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. Right now, please welcome to the show my co-host in exploration, the Admiral of Adventure, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson.
Hello, Jed.
How are you, Jennifer?
I am doing great, and I am so excited about today's episode. We are doing another of my favorite topics, the ocean.
Ooh, what question are we going to solve today?
Well, spin the wheel.
Duh. Okay, here we go.
How can you teach a robot to swim?
Did I hear that right? How do you teach a robot to swim?
I know! How cool is that, right?
That's really cool and really scary. I mean, don't they get rusty and stuff?
No. These are different kinds of robots. But today on our show, we have Dr. Mark Patterson. He is a marine biologist, an engineer, and an aquanaut. And he works at the Marine Science Center at Northeastern University with our very first guest, Dr. Brian Hillman. But Mark creates robots to swim underwater.
You mean there are robots swimming in Boston Harbor? Because, like, that's Northeast, and it's, like, right here in Boston. I might run into one, maybe?
They might be. Let's hear what Dr. Mark has to say. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mark.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
So we kind of led in with you're an underwater explorer, but you kind of explore with special equipment, right? Tell us what you do with robots underwater, because the question that Mark is helping us solve today is, why would you teach a robot to swim?
Well, I could talk all day about robots. And in fact, when Jed brought up the vacuuming robot, I was one of the first people to buy a vacuuming robot with Roombas. And I've been trying for more than 10 years to train my cat to ride on it.
You see those on the internet, right? How do they get those cats to do that?
But on a more serious note, I use robots to explore the biggest habitat on the planet, the ocean.
That is so cool.
I send my robots lots of cool places. And the reason I like to put robots out there is they don't get tired. And I can have them do things that I wouldn't want to ask myself to do or my scuba diving buddy. So it's fun to have a robot companion. In fact, I've got 5 of them in my lab. And my graduate students and my colleagues laugh at me because I refer to them as my children. They're my robot family.
I was going to ask you, do you have names for them?
Well, they're all called Fetches. Fetch was a commercially available. You could actually buy a Fetch if you saved your pennies about 10 years ago. Now they only live in my lab, but we're thinking about putting them back out there in the business world. Lots of people use them for all kinds of things. The U.S. Navy used them to gather intelligence underwater. The NOAA, which is the big agency that protects our oceans and manages our fisheries, they have one that they use to count fish.
Oh, wow.
Academic institutions have bought them to survey the underwater world. But I have the biggest group of Fetches. You might wonder, how do we come up with that name? And it gets back to pets. So if you have a dog that you got well trained, you throw a stick out into the world, and if your dog's a good retriever, it grabs it and brings it back to you. So the idea was that the robot would be like a good doggy, and we would throw it in the ocean, and instead of bringing back something, it would bring back data, which are numbers about what the ocean is up to.
Right.
I'm wondering, Dr. Mark, what does Fetch look like? Does it look like a person, look like a dog, look like a Roomba vacuum?
That's a great question. Fetch has fooled people into thinking that it's a dolphin or a large fish when people have seen it out there doing its business. So it is long and streamlined. It's about as big as a person.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's about as tall as you are, Jed or Jennifer. And it weighs, I need to put it on a diet because it weighs about 200 pounds, which is just heavy enough that two people get a good workout trying to get it into the water.
I was going to ask you, you can lift it. You don't have to have a crane or anything to lift it?
It actually has, you'll laugh, suitcase handles on the front and the back that fold into the body. So getting back to what it looks sort of like a torpedo, but it has fins in places that you would expect to see a fish having fins. So we tried to copy some parts of what nature does when animals swim through the water. And this is a process of copying nature that's been going on for thousands of years. But it now has a name. It's called biomimetics. Mimetic, like mimicking something.
Yes.
So Fetch is a biomimetic torpedo-shaped robot.
So I don't know if you know, do my little plug here. I have a book called Beastly Bionics, and it's all about biomimetics and biomimicry, and that's coming out in June.
Okay.
But biomimicry is cool. Now, let me ask you, do you make it look like an animal because you're trying to be as least disruptive to the environment that you're in? So, like, maybe you don't scare the fish or whatever. Is that the idea?
So that's a side benefit of how we ended up designing it, but that wasn't the goal. The goal was actually to make it be very sleek, like a fish or a dolphin, so that it would go the furthest distance it could on its power source. And its power source are batteries.
Oh.
They're the kind of batteries you might buy at the hardware store. They're lead acid batteries, although since the first Fetch was made, we now have Fetches that have lithium ion polymer batteries, like the kind that's in your smartphone or in your computer. So the robot can go out and swim around with the lead acid batteries about an 8-hour workday. And if we put the more advanced batteries in, it can go out for more than 24 hours, which is pretty cool.
Wow. That is really, and it's much more efficient than a person that needs to come in and go to the bathroom and have a cup of coffee and a sandwich.
Change out their air tanks.
That too, yeah.
Yes, the ocean is not very hospitable for human beings. While we can scuba dive, and I love to scuba dive, and I invented my robot in part because I wanted to have a robot dive buddy. The funny story. I hope you asked me about how Fetch came to be born.
Oh, yeah. We'll ask that next. Exciting.
But it's hard to explore the ocean because the pressure goes up so fast. Every 30 feet you go into the ocean, the pressure doubles to what it is sitting here listening to this podcast at sea level. And very rapidly, machinery has a hard time operating. So it's tough to build robots to go very deep. But getting back to whether it's accepted by sea creatures, the answer is a resounding yes. And I know that because a whole bunch of male California sea lions tried to mate with the robot.
When it was swimming through a kelp bed. Wow.
Well, they're a top predator and they're very playful. And when the robot came by, they said, we need to investigate this thoroughly, which included, we think, trying to mate with the robot.
Interesting. Okay, so now we have to ask, how did you come up with the idea to develop Fetch?
So I've always been passionate about computers and electronics. I taught myself how to build things through ham radio back when I was about 12 years old. I got into amateur radio, and that really opened up my world by being able to talk to scientists, like at the South Pole. on my ham radio, which was...
Oh, that's cool.
And then later, I talked to the astronauts on Skylab as they passed overhead, because they have ham radios on the space stations, including the ISS that's up there right now, which is a,
wow,
a great thing. So I kept at electronics and computers. And then when I had my first job in college working for a marine biologist, he knew I liked to build things, and he said, can you build me something to measure how fast the water is moving over the bottom when we go scuba diving? So I put my head to it, and I ended up tearing apart a calculator and getting a little wind vane like you might buy at a farm supply store, and I concocted this thing that could actually go underwater and count revolutions of the little wind vane. And he said, you need to keep doing this. So I did. And through graduate school, I kept making more and more complex things. And then finally, when I was a professor out at the University of California at Davis, I went on a cruise one day with my colleagues back to Florida to study corals. And I was the chief scientist. And what I didn't know, and this is kind of relevant in this crazy age that we're living through, I didn't know that I was carrying a very bad flu virus when I got on the ship.
Oh, no.
And I got sick on day two. And the captain of the ship made the right decision and ordered the steward to lock me in my room for 3 days or until I got better. So I was actually locked in my room. And they would feed me, they'd knock on the door and bring my meals to me. And it was
so you were quarantined on the ship.
I was quarantined on the ship, and it was a bad fever. It was such a high fever that even though I was taking things like Tylenol, I started getting delirious.
Oh, wow.
And in the middle of my delirium, I had a vision about building the Fetch robot. I realized that personal computers, namely the early Macintosh computers, were now powerful enough that they could be the flight computer for an underwater vehicle. I realized that GPS, which is now a consumer product that everybody's right. got a GPS and can figure out your latitude and longitude, those were brand new, but you could buy them. I realized that you could buy off-the-shelf compasses that were electronic. And so in a feverish one day, I still have the sketches somewhere, I sketched out the entire design of building a robot around a personal computer, and that's how Fetch came to be.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
That's amazing. I wonder what kind of inventions people are going to come up with by the end of this pandemic. I mean, everybody's locked up. We could
yes.
create a whole new world.
Yeah.
Yes, I think a lot of creativity is going on in people's garages, and I'd like to encourage the kids that are home, you know, learning with their families to think about inventing something themselves. A lot of inventions that are done by young adults actually came about because a 9-year-old dreamed about something, and I didn't realize that actually had happened to me until I found a book after my mom passed away, and I was cleaning out her home, and in the attic were all my childhood books. And I found a book about science and engineering that had robots in it.
Oh, there you go.
And on page 4, there was a robot sketch of something swimming through the ocean in Antarctica. And I think it had been built by the U.S. Navy, Jennifer, because I know you're
probably.
And the shape of it, when I saw it many years later after Fetch had been born in my laboratory, it's a dead ringer for Fetch. So I obviously had carried around that image in my subconscious. So kids out there, dream big and invent something that'll change the world.
Yeah. And draw your pictures now. I mean, that's true. If you... You know, get your, I like to encourage kids to have sketch journals, you know, just draw your pictures, and it can be crazy. I mean, you can think of something that you think never will come to pass, and here you go. Maybe all these years later, that will be your Fetch or your robot or, I think that's really cool. Inventing is one of the coolest things ever. Yeah. You know, let your imagination soar.
It sure is.
Now, Dr. Mark, am I right? You call Fetch is an AUV?
Yeah, so AUV is a mouthful. It's short for autonomous, which means it's thinking on its own, underwater, and V stands for vehicle. And unfortunately, it's very close to the acronym for the drones that people do drive with joysticks called UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles.
Okay.
Those are now a consumer item that many listeners may have one. They may have a toy UAV, but an AUV is one that goes beneath the waves.
Well, and now what do you have cameras on this? Are you looking for certain things? Like, what do you do? What do you have Fetch do? What kind of information do you collect?
So that's the great thing about these robots is you can think of them not as a robot necessarily, but you can think of them like a taxi cab.
Oh.
They're a taxi cab for sensors. So if the sensor can fit on the robot, it can go for a ride and collect data. So most of the fetches have many, 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 many sensors on board. They'll have a video camera. They'll have two different kinds of sonars, sometimes three different kinds. It's a robot how close it is to the bottom so it doesn't hit the bottom.
Oh,
another sonar looks forward so it doesn't collide with something. Another sonar looks to the side and can actually make pictures of the seafloor or even count things like fish that are swimming around above the seafloor. Then there's sensors that measure how warm or cold the water is.
Right, water temperature.
How much oxygen is in the water because so many things need oxygen in order to live. Or what's the acidity like, which we measure on a scale called pH. So there's many, many sensors that have flown on the robot through the years. So that's what's fun is that right now I'm trying to develop a way to fly a new kind of sensor that was developed in my lab by a genius named Ethan Edson, who's now started his own company up in Victoria in British Columbia in Canada. Ethan, as an undergraduate, wanted to invent something to allow us to measure all the plastic pollution in the ocean. In fact, this kind of pollution he was interested in are the tiny pieces that you really don't see unless you pull a plankton net through the water and look through a microscope. So he invented an instrument that counts microplastics, which is one of the biggest pollution problems in the sea. And we're busily working trying to figure out how to put his device, which he calls manta ray, because a manta ray is a fish that filters plankton from the water, and it's at risk of eating too much plastic as part of its diet now because
we
messed up the ocean so much. We're trying to put manta ray on Fetch so that Fetch can swim around and get us numbers on how good or bad the situation is in different places.
Wow. Now, Dr. Mark, one of the things you said was that Fetch thinks. Does Fetch think the same way I think? Well, I don't really think all that much, but does Fetch think the way most people think, or is it something different? Fetch is making decisions, and that just kind of boggles my mind.
Yeah, so all the robots out there, and these include ones like your vacuuming robot or ones that maybe put cars together in a factory, all the robots out there are powered by software that we call artificial intelligence. And this kind of intelligence is rules-based so that human beings can write a program to follow a bunch of rules. And Fetch is no different. It's got a very sophisticated program. It's got this thing I mentioned called a state machine where it can flip into different modes of operation without having to go through any other mode of operation. So it can change its behavior on a dime, but I have to put all those behaviors in as the creator. There is another way to build a robot, and a little bit of that approach is used in your vacuuming robot. And my friend Joe Ayers, who's a neurobiologist turned roboticist, has the lab next to mine and the office next to mine at Northeastern University. Joe has invented something called Robo Lobster. And what he did with his robot was, since he'd already spent 30 years completely understanding the nervous system of lobsters and how they walk around the seafloor,
Right.
And I don't know if you know how capable lobsters are at exploring their environment, but lobsters can deal with waves. They can crawl over objects equal to their length. They can squeeze through gaps between rocks exactly equal to their width. They've got 10 legs, and they use those legs to marvelous effect. Well, Joe has reverse engineered all the wiring of all those legs, as well as some of the behavior, and he's made electronic circuits out of these. And he's actually made something where the intelligence is not in a program running on a computer the way Fetch is, where it's, if you encounter this, then do that. If you, this happens, then do that. Instead, his robots, you turn them on and they stand up and they start crawling around and exploring their unstructured environment like the seafloor without any programming. And he calls that biological intelligence as opposed to artificial intelligence.
Wow.
And so I've been trying to figure out, because we interact all the time, how can we marry our two technologies? And we actually have a proposal pending. So National Science Foundation, if you're listening, please send money.
to us too. We'll take them too.
What we want to do is have the more conventional robot, the Fetch, act as literally a taxi cab for RoboLobster and give it a ride to areas of the seafloor where it's scuttling around and mapping the bottom would probably be a better way to do it than the way we do it now with the free swimming robot.
Could you bring it back? Could you get the lobster to go off and then come back?
Yeah, we've worked out a scheme with magnets where the robot would then crawl back and find we figured out, I've actually trained Fetch how to lie down on the seafloor anyway. That was a previous thing I'd done for another project years ago. So we just set Fetch down. The robo lobsters would home in using ultrasonic beacon and then climb aboard, and then a magnet would go click, 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 and then taxi cab takes off and brings the babies home.
So that's amazing, right?
It is amazing, and it's kind of scary, Dr. Mark. I have to tell you, I get Fetch. Fetch is, you know, like kind of overweight, and you got to pick them up by the luggage handles to get them in and out of the water. But this lobster thing, you know, it sounds like it can crawl up out of the water over in Revere Beach and go, hey, why are you eating my cousins in that roll over there?
So when you think about why Joe is on the right track and why artificial intelligence, as great as it is not going to be how we get to thinking machines the way that has been imagined by Hollywood. When you look outside and you look in the trees or you look in the bushes, you don't see like birds stuck in the branches of the tree, unable to fly away. Or you don't see bunnies stuck in the bushes because they can't figure out how to get out of there. And yet if we try and build robots to fly through a tree or to navigate through a bunch of bushes in your backyard or to navigate through a coral reef, for example, very close to the coral reef, we can't do it using AI.
No.
But we can do it using BI. It's just going to require some very clever collaboration between biologists and engineers. As Dr. Ayers likes to say, animals are existence proofs, meaning because they exist, yes, they're proof that it's possible to make an autonomous object that can navigate through trees or can navigate through the bushes in your backyard. It's possible. We just got to copy nature more.
Oh, absolutely. Biomimicry, biomimetics, that's where it's at. And I mean, I have not heard about biological intelligence, but I'm going to go look it up. So listeners, if you want to learn more about that, just go to the internet and do some searches on that to find out more information. So I have to ask you, are you, because you have, you know, lots of degrees, do you have a degree in engineering? Or
no, I'm self-taught, and that's another thing I want to encourage kids out,
yes,
there is, you know, try a lot of things. And even when you go off to high school or if you go to college, don't just be narrowly focused on something. It's always good to play. And I've never stopped playing. much to the chagrin of my wife and my kids sometimes, some of my embarrassing behaviors when I'm playing. Now, it's good to have the curiosity of a very young person, because you're always willing to teach yourself new things. That did have a drawback, though, Jennifer, because when Jim Sias and I were trying to build Fetch, his degree was in industrial design, and all my degrees are in biology.
Oh, yeah.
And when we did try and get government funding to develop the robot further, et cetera, we did run into the, this is just the way the world is now. You do have to specialize to some degree in order to have credibility. And because we had no credentials as engineers, the federal government didn't want to stroke us a check for the robotics. They've gotten past that now, but the same thing happened to Dr. Ayers with his RoboLobster. All his degrees are in biology as well.
But the point is, too, is that, like you said, don't let that stop you. I mean, just because you don't have a degree in it doesn't mean that you can't create Fetch. I mean, I think that that's all of your years of inventing that you spent drawing pictures and figuring things out and working with your hands and mechanics, that's how you
and the kids out there listening, and the parents too, if there are any, we really are. I don't know if you've seen, there was an ad for Microsoft maybe 6 months ago about we're living in, you know, a magical age where you can do incredible things, and that's because the technology is now so powerful that a beginner can make something quite sophisticated and take it to a level that nobody anticipated. So the undergraduates that come to me that aren't engineers, they're biologists, but they feel like they're missing out. I said, just get on the internet, go buy yourself a soldering iron, go here to this Arduino forum, which is a kind of small computer that you can build almost any device around. And I said, join the Arduino club at Northeastern. And you'll meet a whole bunch of people. Some of them will be photojournalists. Some of them will be English majors. And you'll all burn your fingers learning how to use a soldering iron. But you'll have fun. And you might make something that could, at a minimum, show you the magic behind your smartphone. And usually people end up making projects that they use as practical jokes on their roommates. So,
well, there is that too, right?
There's that too.
Now, Jed, we're going to put the lobster, right? We make the lobster come up in your, you know, your room up on you.
He can chase Augie around the backyard.
There you go. He's a friend for Augie.
Yeah. Hey, Dr. Mark, you know, I love that you're encouraging kids to start doing something now, start creating now. Do you have something that you can challenge them with, right, that can get those creative juices flowing?
Yeah, so one of the problems that we face in the underwater world is when we take pictures, whether it's with a camera or even with sonar, with ultrasound, the pictures are often really bad. And that an expert often has to look at them for quite a while to figure out what they're looking at. So this is a problem that underwater scientists using robots encounter all the time. And so I actually trained Fetch how to figure out what it was seeing using a special program called a neural network, where the program tries to classify what it's seeing into things that it's seen before. So we're going to do a test. You're solve it. Is to get a camera, and maybe your parents will let you use their smartphone if you're careful. Please don't scratch it or drop it if it's not yours. Go and take a few pictures around your house of something. It can be an unsuspecting brother or sister, or your grandma, or a pet, or a household object. But what I want you to do is make a really bad picture. What do I mean by bad? I want you to take it in a way that makes it hard for the person to know what they're looking at. So maybe turn the lights off in the room if it's after dark. Or if you're taking a picture of yourself, don't just take a selfie of yourself, because your parents are going to recognize you immediately. Take a selfie of, like, the top of your head, or... or get a piece of aluminum foil and crinkle it so that it's a goofy mirror, and then take a picture of your face reflected in the goofy mirror. You're going to give them a handful of pictures and then ask your friend or family member, what is this thing? And the interesting thing will be to see what they say. If they get the answer right, you got to ask them a follow-up question. Say, how did you know that it was that object? What did your brain and your eye key in on to tell you what you were seeing? And when you get those answers, you'll have some idea of some of the programming that I do on my robots when I'm trying to train them to recognize a shark versus a jellyfish or something like that. So I think it'll be fun to try and fool your folks or your family members with a set of bad pictures.
Oh, I love that challenge. So kids, if you're going to do this, make sure that you get your parents' permission, but please share it with us if you're allowed to on our Instagram or our Twitter page. We are at KidsSolve, or you can email it to us through our website. But you can find out all the information about Dr. Patterson on, we'll have a link on our website, which is www.solveitforkids.com. This has been a really interesting conversation, and I've learned so much about AUVs, and I'm going to look up biological intelligence as soon as we get off. Thank you so much for being a part of our show, Dr. Mark.
It was my pleasure, and thanks to everybody who listens into the podcast, and everybody stay safe and healthy.
Jennifer, that was incredible. Robot swimming, a robot lobster. Man, what a fun interview.
That was so cool. I know. I mean, two of my favorite things, robots and the ocean. And then, don't you just love how he is a scientist, but then became an engineer to solve his own problem?
Yeah.
Look at that.
I love that. I love, you know, people just following their passion and figuring problems out and empowering themselves and empowering us.
Right. So, kids, and everyone who's listened, if you want to learn more about Dr. Mark, please be sure to visit our website and his podcast page there at solveitforkids.com. You'll see some cool videos. You'll see pictures of the robots that he's created. And also, if you want to use something like this in your classroom, don't forget to check out our teachers tab at the top of the solveitforkids.com. We have our teacher pay teachers teacher pack for Dr. Brian Hellman, where you can learn all about being an aquanaut.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey, I can't wait. Can we do this again next week?
We can. We have another great episode of
Solve It for Kids.